and thank you for tuning in to Mormon Channel Daily today. I'm Charlotte Kniep. And we've been discussing LDS founder and prophet Joseph Smith this month on our show. And oftentimes when people are learning about the early days of the LDS Church, they read about interesting decisions that were made at the time to help the organization grow and flourish in a country that was not always welcoming to them. We have the managing LDS historian for the Joseph Smith Papers Project, Matthew Godfrey, in the studio with us today to discuss some of these decisions that Joseph Smith made in order to restore the gospel of Jesus Christ to the earth. Thanks for being here, Matt.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So there was a lot of controversy surrounding Joseph Smith when he publicly declared as a 14-year-old uneducated farm boy that God had appeared to him. What was the general attitude of Palmyra at the time that he did that?
According to contemporary sources that we have, Joseph's own retellings of the first vision, he says that he told at least one minister about the first vision, and he received a very negative reaction from that minister about it. And because of that, it appears that he probably didn't tell a whole lot of people after that, because as a 14-year-old, you can imagine being kind of shot down as to a spiritual experience that you've just had. It was probably something that he didn't share that widely, especially in public verbally to people. And it's not really until the 1830s that we have him really starting to write down his accounts of what happened in the Sacred Grove.
And then he went on to share four different firsthand accounts.
Correct.
Of the first vision, and then recorded different versions in his journal and things. And that trips a lot of people up. That makes people question, you know, was that in fact a real occurrence?
Sure.
What would you, from all of your studying of these Joseph Smith documents, what would you say to people who have that question?
Yeah. Well, I would first say that it's fairly natural and fairly human-like for people to remember things differently at different times in their lives. I don't think any of us can have a spiritual experience and then consistently say the same thing about it throughout all of our lives. That's just not how memory works. We remember things at different times. We convey things to people at different times, depending on who we're talking to, the reasons why we're talking to them. So I've often said to people that if I'm talking about how I got my testimony of the Book of Mormon and I'm relaying this to a child who's 8 years old, I'm going to tell the story differently than I would to someone who might be a close family member who's in their 40s.
Right.
Because it's a different audience and a different approach that I would take to that. So I think when you look at these four accounts, it's actually pretty neat that we have the four different accounts, because when you take them together, you get a really well-rounded kind of understanding of how Joseph Smith understood the first vision at different parts in his life and what it meant to him at different stages in his life. And I also think, too, that context behind why he's doing these different accounts is important as well. So, for example, the 1832 account, the very first account that he puts down on paper, he talks a lot in there about forgiveness and wanting to seek forgiveness from God for his sins and for things that he's done in his life that perhaps he shouldn't have done. And when you look at the time that he composes this account, it's in the summer of 1832. And he's been spending time in Greenville, Indiana, with Newell K. Whitney, who was injured as they're returning home from Missouri to Ohio from a visit to Missouri. And Joseph writes a letter to Emma in Greenville on June 6, 1832, where he tells her that while he's been there with Newell K. Whitney, he's had a lot of opportunity to go back and kind of have some private moments in a grove in the back of the town. And while he's been doing that, he's recalled to his mind some of his past sins and follies, and he's also recalled in his mind God's forgiveness for those things. So it's no surprise to me that shortly after that, he's writing this account where he's talking about seeking forgiveness, because that had been very much on his mind. We have to look at the context behind why he's creating these accounts, the audience to which he's making these accounts, and just remembering that it's human nature to remember things differently or to have slight differences in what's going on when you're remembering events that have happened.
Absolutely. That's actually a really interesting story. I've never heard of it before, but it makes sense because the spirit, the whole role of the spirit is to bring things to your remembrance as well. So it makes sense that it different points in his life, certain instances in the first vision would stand out to him more, maybe more than others.
Right.
So controversy just kind of followed Joseph Smith his entire life. There were people who disagreed with him and people who wanted to kill him and wanted to imprison him. And one of the more controversial issues that we still talk about a lot today is polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
And from documents that you've read, what can you tell us about the overall attitude of when polygamy was instituted and how Joseph Smith felt about it himself?
Sure. One of the unfortunate things is we don't have a lot or really any records from Joseph Smith himself about polygamy. What we can surmise from what other people have said about polygamy is that Joseph Smith certainly did practice polygamy. He had a number of wives. He, of course, dictated the revelation, which is now section 132 in the LDS Doctrine and Covenants that commands polygamy to go forth. It seems that Joseph himself believed very strongly that polygamy was something that God commanded him to do. When you look at what other people have said, some of his wives, some of his associates, it's not just that he's doing this just because, hey, you know, I'm a prophet, I have all this power, people follow me, so I'm going to start doing this now. But he truly believed that it was something that God had commanded him to do. And it also seems like it wasn't something that was easy for him to do. It took quite a bit of time. There's some evidence that he may have got the revelation on polygamy as early as 1831. He doesn't doesn't marry his first plural wife until probably around 1835. We're not exactly sure on the time period. And then he doesn't marry another plural wife until 1841. So this isn't something where, you know, he's told to do it and he rushes right out and does it.
Right.
There is one account from one of his plural wives that say that Joseph wouldn't practice polygamy until an angel appeared to him with a drawn sword and told him that he would be smitten dead unless he did what the Lord had commanded him to do. It does speak to this larger issue that it wasn't something that was easy for him.
I think it just goes to show that you know, we talked a little bit about presentism before with other LDS historians and how people can't judge their past actions based on our current context of understanding.
Yes.
And obviously, if you delve deep enough into anyone's life, there's going to be something that you are bound to disagree with, something that's going to rub you the wrong way or seem a little odd. Why do you think it's important for people to accept that human part of Joseph Smith along with the calling he had from God to be a prophet?
Well, for me, it gives me hope because it shows me, for one thing, that Joseph Smith was a real person. He's not this mythic figure that we sometimes, you know, kind of put on a pedestal in LDS culture of someone who was perfect, who couldn't ever do anything wrong, who couldn't have a bad thought, who couldn't be angry with anyone or anything like this. I mean, that's just not how life is. We are human. We have, you know, natural tendencies. And so it gives me hope that perhaps, you know, if the Lord can work with Joseph Smith to do such an incredible work as to the restoration of the gospel, perhaps for myself, in my own flawed condition, the Lord can bless someone's life through me. So for me, it's a great testimony builder to look at Joseph Smith and to see him as someone who was human and who did have mistakes, and yet he was still able to accomplish a great work. I think that's something that really helps me understand how God works with us as human beings, and that just because we make mistakes doesn't mean that he still can't do great things through us.
And I think it's a testimony, too, to how powerful God really is. If he wants his work to go out into the world, he's going to call imperfect people. He's going to call a 14-year-old boy to do this for him because his word is so powerful and it can cut through doubt and confusion.
Yes.
How do you think your testimony of Joseph Smith has been affected from your studying these documents about his life?
Yeah. It's interesting. I get asked that question quite a bit. And from a lot of people, they ask that question assuming that my testimony has been adversely affected by looking at the church's past. And I've even had some people tell me, oh, you know, I'm glad that you're willing to go and research the church's past because I would never want to do that. I don't want to dig up all that stuff. But it's had quite the opposite effect for me. I've really come to enjoy reading about Joseph Smith, getting to know him through letters that he wrote, through his journals, through other documents that he prepared, because it really has made him real to me, kind of like what I was talking about. It's made him a real person to me, because I've seen that not only was he the leader of a church, this prophet that we hold and revere in the church, but he was also a father, and he was a husband, and he was a son, and he was a brother, and he had to go through the same challenges of life that we all have to go through. He had to deal with the death of numerous children that he had. And he's doing all of this while he's trying to run this church and fulfill what he believes God has commanded him to do.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And for more information on Joseph Smith's life, you can visit josephsmithpapers.org. And for blog posts, podcasts, and videos on his life and ministry, you can visit mormonchannel.org. And we're going to end our episode today with a quote from LDS leader in the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, Elder Neil L. Anderson. And he said, "Questions concerning the prophet Joseph Smith are not new. They have been hurled by his critics since this work began. For now, give Brother Joseph a break. In a future day, you will have 100 times more information than from all of today's search engines combined, and it will come from our all-knowing Father in heaven. I testify that he was a prophet of God. Settle this in your mind and move forward." Thank you so much for listening today. Mormon Channel Daily is brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.